girls. What? Keep it fresh.
Welcome to Female Trouble. I'm Quinn Kelly, and this is a podcast spotlighting women in Baltimore. Sarah Autry plays bass, sings, and writes songs in the Baltimore band Wing Dam, a 90s-influenced guitar rock trio. The band, which includes Austin Talley and Abe Sanders, has put out 3 full-length albums, most recently 2016's Glow Ahead. Sarah and I talked about leaving your hometown, loving pop music, and building a life in Baltimore. Here's our conversation. When did you start making music?
Oh, I don't know if I can call this making music, but when I was like 3 years old, even back then, I used to like line my stuffed animals up on the stairs like an audience and sing to them. So it's always been my thing. But I started like playing music like in a band, like a symphonic wind ensemble in 6th grade. That's when I started learning like flute and stuff.
Were you into that, or was that obsessed. Parents made you do it?
Obsessed. I was like counting down the days to when I could like be in band class, get my flute, and like be as insanely competitive about it as possible.
So your competitive streak always came out in the form of music?
And a couple other things, but certainly in the music world, I was like, if I'm not, at least in like playing, you know, in the symphonic wind ensemble world, I was always like, if I'm not the best, I'm gonna be very sad.
So what kind of music did you like listening to growing up?
Oh, so I'm from Southern Virginia, and there's this one radio station called Z104, and it's kind of the 92Q of suburban Southern Virginia. So I grew up listening to like top 40, basically Christina Aguilera, TLC, R. Kelly, unfortunately, Britney, Backstreet, NSYNC, all those. And then like I had an older brother who was kind of like a rock guy, so he was always listening to like Collective Soul and Smashing Pumpkins and Bush and Silverchair, like all those like mid-90s, late-90s kind of like mashup bands.
Do you think that's where some of the like 90s influence of Wing Dam comes from?
Maybe. Probably like subconsciously, just because I was like, the 90s were really formative for me. I was like age 2 through 12 in the 90s. So like that's when I started listening to music, and it started, you know, like hitting my brain and forming, you know, like subconsciously, I guess, what the things that like I really like about music.
Were you writing songs at that time?
No. No. I was like picking my nose and like wanting to kiss boys. I like didn't ever have a guitar or like any of those things. I just like had a flute and was like learning how to play that in school, but I wasn't like singing or writing anything at that point.
Were you into classical music too with the flute?
Totally. So I used to play flute in church. Like my family's pretty religious. Like I am not, but growing up, like in church, I was so bored. And then when I started playing the flute, I was like, I'm going to play flute in church, so I like have something to do. But I would just play flute in church.
How long did you keep doing that?
Until I was 18. So like from 12 to 18 or 11 or 12 to 18.
What was Southern Virginia like?
They say like Virginia's for lovers, and I don't think I grew up in that part of Virginia. It was more like Virginia's for traffic lovers and suburban parking lots. I never really felt comfortable. Like even as a kid, I was like, why am I so uncomfortable here? Like, I don't really get along. Like, I never really felt like I vibed with anybody except like the, you know, like the weirdos and stuff. I was always kind of like a standout weirdo in Southern Virginia. So it's fine.
What about you stood out in Virginia?
I've always kind of dressed insane. And then like where I'm from, it's kind of like very preppy American Eagle, like flat ironed hair, like people who actually brush their hair. You know, it's like very like Southern And not to like stereotype anybody, but every time I go south, I notice this, that like the southern women like groom themselves really well and like are very put together in appearance and like are not what I would say anything that I fall into.
You're gesturing to yourself, yeah, for those who can't see.
I'm not very, my appearance didn't fit in. I've always been kind of like a loud, kooky, like weird sense of humor kind of person. And that's just like not the norm down there, I'd say.
So did you know from a young age that you wanted to go somewhere else?
Yeah, definitely. I always wanted to like live in a city, quote unquote. Like I went to New York City in middle school and high school for band trips and was like, this is where I want to be. Like everybody looked so cool and there was so much to do and like so much like sophistication and everybody seemed like they really had something to do. You know, like growing up in Southern Virginia, I never really felt like I had anything to do. Like, there's no place to go see shows, really. No, like, local scene, no art scene that I knew of at the time. So, like, that's what I always wanted to be around, like, in a city.
Did you move to any other city before landing in Baltimore?
Yeah, I did. So I lived in Richmond for a couple years. I went to VCU, Virginia Commonwealth University, and I flunked out pretty immediately for classical flute performance. And I was like, I don't care about this anymore. And that's when I started, like, playing guitar and stuff, but I moved to a place called Shepherdstown, West Virginia, for I think like a year and a half, maybe. I like met some like dude there while I was on vacation and was like, I'm gonna move here. And then I did. And it was cool because it was like a small town, but like kind of like a really great art scene, music scene and stuff. So I started playing music with people there in West Virginia and started my first band called Bitch Cave in Shepherdstown. And then living there, I met a bunch of people who were touring through Shepherdstown from Baltimore. And that's where I kind of like got the idea that like Baltimore was the place for me.
Bitch Cave was kind of like your first quote unquote real band.
Totally.
Yeah. What was that experience like?
Amazing. It was so freaking cool, dude. Like you want something all your life. And when it finally happens, you're like, holy shit. Like, so this band was like pretty rock. Like it started out as like me and this other girl, Cassie Lopez. She performs in Nashville now, but we were doing like folk songs and then we were like, whoa, we got an electric guitar. We're going to plug in and play that. And then we were like, oh my God, it's so cool. We need a drummer. Then we got a drummer and then we were like, oh my God, this is great. We need a bassist. So we got a bassist. So we had like this band of like best friends playing like super cool rock music, kind of like honestly, it's kind of like Wing Dam sounding, but like, I don't know, like very, this is the era of Fleet Foxes, you know what mm-hmm, I mean? Like yeah. Fleet Foxy vocals and like, I don't know, it was really fun, like so cool. We got to perform, we like got pretty cool pretty fast in the Shepherdstown, West Virginia music scene. And like we got to open up for Japanther and play with Future Islands. And when they were in Shepherdstown and like all these like sick bands that would tour through, we got to open up for them. And that was like a dream come true for like a small town big dreamer. You know what I mean?
So if you were having this like great experience with the band, what made it time to move on to Baltimore and why Baltimore?
So my partner at the time graduated the college in Shepherd and he was like, I'm going to move to Baltimore. And I was like, well, I guess I'm moving to Baltimore. But I wasn't sad about it. I was sad about it because Bitch Cave was done. And that was really sad because it's like, you know, my first child, like abandoning it by the side of the road to like move on to bigger, better things. But not necessarily bigger or better, but different things. And I like met all these people from Baltimore, so I kind of knew some people. I kind of had an idea of like what the music scene was like out there. So he chose Baltimore and I went along for the ride because why not?
I would imagine when you came to Baltimore, were there a lot of other kind of music transplants at that time?
Well, I guess the whole Wham City thing is a transplant, technically, when you think about it, because they're all from SUNY Purchase in New York, I think. So when I first moved to Baltimore, I didn't really know who was transplanted or not, because I was just like, I'm new.
What was it like to be the new guy in Baltimore?
It kind of, it sucked at first, just because I kind of suffer from social anxiety. I'm like a nervous talker. And like, so I didn't really know where to go. So I moved to Baltimore without a phone, a computer, a bike, a car. Like I basically had like a suitcase full of stuff. And I just didn't know how to find people. Like, I didn't drink at the time, so I wasn't, like, going out to bars to, like, happenstance run into people and make friends. And but thankfully, my roommates were really in the scene, and so they, after a while, after I kind of, like, got over the shell shock of living in a, like, what, if you're not from a city, Baltimore kind of seems like a big city. After I got over that initial shock, my roommates started bringing me out to shows at the Copycat and Wind Up Space and like Floristry and stuff. So I kind of like met people there, and it started working out like 6 months after I moved to Baltimore. But it was like very overwhelming and inspiring. And like, I was writing a lot of music because I do that best when I'm like crushingly lonely and sad.
That's like the paradox of music writing, right? Like,
yeah,
so many people are like, I don't want to be depressed anymore, but that is when I write really good music.
Yeah, it's like a coping mechanism. Like, you don't need a coping mechanism if you're like, wow, gee, everything's just working out.
So at this point, did you know that like music was your thing? Like, this is what you were going to do in Baltimore?
Yeah. Well, I had always like kind of, not that I have like any control over like my life or like what I become or how people receive me, so to speak. Like, it's always, music has always been the one thing that I actually super duper give a shit about. It's like the only thing, the one like thread throughout my life that has kept me going. Like, even, you know, like in elementary school or like middle school, high school and stuff, they're like, what do you want to be when you grow up? And I've always been like, music. I have no words. Apparently I'm like, it's the only thing I've ever really like felt inspired to continue working on, because it's the one thing I'm interested in for a career.
You've been in a lot of different bands at this point, and what's kind of the experience of like having different musical projects going on? And do you know when one is like really special or you have something there versus maybe just an interesting creative outlet?
So at the risk of sounding like an elitist or something, I like only stay in bands that feel super special to me, like where there's chemistry. Like, I'm kind of like, maybe this is a character flaw, but I only ever do things when they feel right and are easy the first time. Like, if, like with people, like friendships or jobs or bands. Like, if I'm like, wow, like at the first practice, I'm like, this is, I'm going to stay in this and keep doing this.
So you follow your intuition?
I guess so. That's a really succinct way to put that.
No.
Yeah, I follow my intuition.
How did you get involved with Wingdam?
Oh, okay. So I met Austin, who's the guitar player and now my husband.
Oh.
So I was, there's kind of like a medium long story. Can I tell it?
Go for it.
Okay.
So this is a medium long podcast.
Okay, great. I'm a medium person. So that boy, man, who I moved to Baltimore with, like we broke up. And we're moving out of this one house, and the person who took our room in this house, it was Austin Talley. And we became friends, like very platonic friend, well, at least for me, platonic friends for a while. And Austin is a musician, and he was playing solo under the name Wingdam. And he asked me to come and jam one day, and I came to jam, and he was going to like stick me on bass, which is weird because I've never played it. But then I... Side tangent, it blew my mind that like the bass is actually just like four of the strings of the guitar, which I do play. So it was like, oh, I do this. So I got to band practice for the first time to jam, and Abe was in the basement playing drums because he lived in the house with Austin at the same time too. It was just real estate. Real estate brought Wingdam together. Like, we all lived in this one house at one time or other, and Austin kind of brought us together, and we started jamming and had like a really good time and became weirdly good friends.
What's the dynamic like being in a band with your husband and one other person?
So Abe jokes about this all the time because he's like, he has this, hey Abe, he has this thing where he tends to hang out with couples. So it's like not weird. And like Austin and I have a very fluid I hope, relationship. Because we live together, we work together, we're in a band together, we tour together, we're partners, best friends, husband, wife, like the list goes on and on. So we switch modes pretty well. Like when we're hanging out with Abram, we're not like, to set a tableau, we're not like straddling each other, making out with Abe, like sitting next to us, you know what I mean? So we all have like a really good dynamic because we try to be like empathetic and not be like that fucking couple that's like, you know, being like fighting or making out or like being like grab ass in front of people who are just trying to chill.
So it works out well.
Yeah, it works out really well. Plus, like within Wingdam, it's like we all like from day to day form alliances against each other. Like each day it's a different person getting picked on. So it's like we all have that relationship too, which is pretty fun.
It seems like with the three full-length Wingdam albums that you've been on, like you've gotten more of your own songs in there and you've been writing more. I mean, kind of tell me about that evolution.
Sure. So when I joined Wingdam, it was Austin's solo project. So, and I had my own, I still have my own project, but it was more on the forefront for me at that point. So I was performing as Witch Magic, which with all my songs, and Wingdam was all Austin's songs. So on Thick Phase No Splash, which is our first full-length studio album, brain fart, Austin wrote all the songs for that. And then I started being like, whoa, I could write a song for Wingdam. Like, it would be great because Witch Magic is a solo project. And I recalled being in Bitch Cave. I was like, it's so awesome to play my songs with a full band. Like, it's like the total most like wonderfully narcissistic way to experience your own music is with other people playing on it. So I started bringing songs to the band and they liked them a lot, which was pretty awesome. And then I kind of like went, I had a couple songs on Shifter Bliss, which is the second studio album. And then on Glow Ahead, I think I wrote exactly half of the songs. The joke is that the next album is going to be all my songs.
Yeah, it's the next step in the evolution.
Just like completely phase Austin out like a rude bitch.
So it's gotten more like collaborative over time?
Yeah, absolutely. Like Austin, when I first joined the band, I didn't really know Austin that well. And I didn't want to be like, thanks for having me in your band. I have all these ideas. Let's do them right now. You know, so I didn't really want to take complete ownership I more felt like a guest in someone else's band. And then as time went on, I felt more like part of the family and, you know, was invited to contribute. So I really do take that, you know, seriously. And I'm like, well, I'll write you songs. I mean, if you want me to do that.
What is it about Baltimore that keeps you guys here?
That's an interesting question. That's a great question. After doing like a full U.S. tour and experiencing California for the first time, maybe the second time, whatever, Austin and I realized we love California and we wanted to move out there and try it out. And Abe was moving to San Diego because his girlfriend at the time lived there. Traitor. Just kidding. Abe moved out to California and Austin and I were trying to, but we couldn't get, it's like a chicken egg situation over there. Like you can't get a lease without a job and you can't get a job without living there. So, and not only that, but the leases were like $3,000 a month for like a 600 square foot apartment, which, you know, 10 miles in from the beach. So it was just like, God, we could move out here, but we're never going to be able to afford to tour or do anything for that matter, because who the fuck has $3,000 for anything? I mean, whatever. I mean, I'm sure people do. But so Abe was living out there and Austin and I didn't make it. And like while we were trying to move there, we kind of were like, what? Wait a second. Like the ghost ship thing happened in Oakland, which was so terrible. And we were thinking like, you know, we watched like the Bell Foundry get not raided, but shut down. And, you know, like all the DIY spots kind of shuttered up for the most part because there's this big crackdown on all that stuff. And we like felt bad, but the music scene gave us so much fulfillment in our lives. Like so many opportunities and all that stuff. And we came to the conclusion that like, just taking that and moving away doesn't help anybody. You know what I mean? It's kind of like we decided we wanted to like invest back into the music scene and like community that took us from, you know, like nobody, and like I don't really have. We just wanted to give back instead of take and move away. So we bought a property in Baltimore to stay here. You know, like, and are trying to like come up with business ideas to like invest more in Baltimore. You know what I mean? Like, we didn't want to give up on the city, basically.
Was there any disappointment there in not getting to try out California?
Slightly, but we realized that it's kind of one of those places that's really fun to visit, but would possibly be way too stressful to live in.
I think once you get used to like how cheap things can be in Baltimore too, I mean, housing can be really expensive, but it's hard to leave for a new place sometimes when you see exactly like $3,000 for a 600 square foot apartment.
I know, like, that's like no quality of life. And like, even if like, say I want to be in California for part of the year, like I can do that now because my cost of living isn't like keeping me chained to like a overtime job.
That's interesting about wanting to give back to the city and feeling an obligation here. A lot of people I've talked to on this podcast from all different careers and walks of life have expressed a similar sentiment or have moved away, and then it kind of like restores their faith in Baltimore and they've come back. I mean, do you think artists or anyone who lives here, like, what is the responsibility to Baltimore? And do you think people who do leave are kind of like robbing the city of anything?
Well, I wouldn't ever really want to tell anybody how to live their life, because the way I think about it is like, if you're going to be happier at a different in a different place, like you're going to be happier people are better people, and you'll bring better energy, you know, like you'll be better where you want to be, and that will boost the community there. And for everyone who leaves, you know, like everybody has their reasons, and I just can't judge that. But I totally understand why people move away. You know, like I moved away from home and people were like, you know, you're not going to be happier when you leave. Like, how sure, like, see you soon, you know, like when I left. And then it's like, it's sometimes a change of place really can make you a much happier person and let you live like a more fulfilling life. And, you know, if that's what you want and you need, like, do you, you know.
Do most people stay in your hometown?
Yes. I can only speak for the people that I know. I see a lot of people try to move away and then move back home. And I did that a few times, actually. I moved to Richmond and I moved back and then tried to move out of my mom's house and then moved back. And so, yeah, it seems kind of like vortex-y, you know? Like, I mean, like no shade at all. But like, you know, my little brother, who is amazing, bought a house like two blocks over from my mom's house. You know, like my friends from like high school and stuff, a lot of them still live there, you know, and it's like, if they're happy there, that's freaking great. But I totally understand why people move from places is what I'm trying to say in a million words.
So for you, moving, it has given you something more. It's not just like running away from one thing, which it sounds like maybe some people back home kind of assumed.
Yeah. I mean, I was struggling a lot living in Southern Virginia. Like I just, like I said, like all I've ever wanted to do is play music live, like play shows, be a band, like, and collaborate with people. And that didn't happen there. And so, you know, I was like, I was very much so struggling with like, you know, like substance abuse problems and stuff. But like when I moved, right, exactly, just to answer the question, when I moved, people were like, you know, but I moved with a goal in mind. Which I feel like, and the goal wasn't escape this place. My goal was meet people and play music. And so I feel like if you have a goal to work towards, that's so much, it just gives you something to do, something to strive for, rather than just like escaping something. It's like, well, now I'm not there, but now what, you know?
What is it about performing that you love?
I love showing off. I love like, look what I did, look what I wrote, like, it's something that I'm very proud of. Like, my music is something that I'm very proud of. And, you know, I feel like I write songs from, like, a very honest place about very real things. And, like, if any of my lyrics or, like, anything about the music can, like, help somebody or make somebody feel better or, like, help somebody understand themselves or another person better, like, it's just so rewarding to, like, possibly do that, but also just, like, the experience of performing has always been like a natural high, unlike anything else. Like even when I was like in like sixth grade band and stuff, like performances, it just adds like this special like glimmer of magic to your songs because there's other people there and it's like a collective experience rather than like a band practice when you're just like in a basement in your sweatpants, like, you know, playing music. It just like makes it so much more special to like have other people involved.
Are you someone who is comfortable putting everything out there like before it's perfect or something? Or are you someone who, you know, takes your time and really gets to like a polished place before you share it with the world?
I like blow my load early. Like the second I start writing like a cool chord progression, I'm like FaceTiming everyone I know. I'm like, listen to this. So I'm definitely like kind of hasty in that sense, but I also believe in like a raw product where it's like it'll be just as good brand new as it will be like polished and finished. So I'm the one pushing the band, like after we play like one of my new songs like 5 times and we feel pretty good about it, I'm like, let's play it at the show tonight. And they're like, dude, no, like, can we possibly like work on this a little? So like it really depends on the day though, because some days I get like really song shy and I'll like write something and then like right before I'm about to show somebody, I feel like horrible about what I've just written. And I'm like, oh, this is like actually a piece of trash. Like maybe I shouldn't show them. But like usually I just blow my load and I'm like, look.
Is it ever difficult to write about difficult things? Is that a way that you process things, or do you have to kind of like push yourself to achieve that level of honesty and vulnerability?
Both. So I tend to write most about relationships, and when you're, it's hard for me to be artistically honest, or like lyrically honest and like artistically ethical. And like sometimes writing songs where like, you know, I might be writing a song about a problem in my relationship and I feel like I need to self-edit a lot because I don't want to bring a song, you know, that could be hurtful to anybody, to the band, or anybody in the band, to the band. So that is kind of like one thing that's like a stick in my spokes, I feel like. Lyrically, I'm very specific, like vaguely specific. Like a lot of the times when I write a song, I don't know what I'm writing it about until I read the lyrics a week later and I'm like, oh my God, this is about like this one really specific situation that I didn't even realize I was writing about. Like I kind of use like stream of conscience lyrics like as like vague yet applicable as possible, if that makes any sense. Like, and so a lot of the times when I write, I don't know what I'm writing about until it starts coming out. And then I'm like, oh, this was like on the, bubbling to the surface. But it definitely is a coping mechanism. Like, I mean, I wish I could write like political songs or something to like make me feel better about that stuff. But it's mainly just like a coping mechanism for like self-esteem issues and like relationship stuff and like songs about like, believe it or not, you never know from the lyrics, but like, you know, overcoming like abuse or any of those things. So definitely coping mechanism for sure.
I feel like it would be a terrible idea to write political songs if it was like forced, you know, that just sounds incredibly corny.
I know. That's why I leave that alone. I mean, we do have a new song that Austin wrote about like, it sounds so bad, but the song is so amazing. It's about global warming. The way it's worded is like it just sounds like a fist pumper kind of like chuggy, like rock, punkier kind of song. But like he's talking about like not needing a heavy coat because it's warm in like December. But whatever.
It's interesting you talk about the kind of like vague specificity. I feel like that's like a really interesting songwriting technique because it's speaking to a specific experience in your life, but it's vague enough that it's relatable to so many people. Is that something you think about?
Yeah, I'm very, I don't want to say judgy, but I'm going to say picky. Like I have a really hard time listening to extremely specific lyrics, like, let's say kind of like, like narrative lyrics or like lyrics where people's names are mentioned, like, and you're like, who the fuck is
Daniel?
I'm
thinking of kind of like the rock opera-ish kind of bands, like,
yeah, or like Decemberists, or like, yeah, or like, even honestly, like a lot of the times, like Modest Mouse and stuff, I'm like, I don't really vibe with like their lyrical style at all. Like, I respect a lot about those bands, but maybe not the Decemberists, but I respect a lot of them.
How dare you?
I know. It's like, is that her favorite band?
It is not.
Okay,
no, I am a Modest Mouse fan, not a Decemberist fan. But
okay, all right, chill.
Just to get that on the record.
That's what's up. Either way, we could still be friends, but I felt really bad. I really like relatable lyrics where you're kind of not singing about like situations or places or like events that happened, but more like feeling related lyrics in songs. And I feel like, or state of mind lyrics in songs, are like maybe nostalgia in lyrics in songs. Like, I feel like Beach House does a really great job at that. But I really appreciate songs that aren't like, that don't cut the listener off of what it's about, where it's like interpretable, where you can insert yourself into the song and kind of like imagine like these lyrics are like for you and about you.
I guess we only kind of talked about like your musical influences when you were a kid, but at what time did you start getting more into whatever music you're into now and like discovering those types of bands? And I mean, I know that musicians hate like answering their influences, but were there any bands or albums or anything that kind of got the wheels turning in that way?
I would say that most of my musical like influences are probably subconscious. Like, I don't listen to a band usually and be like, ooh, I want to sound like that. Or like, not that you're insinuating I do that, but like, I just listen to music I enjoy and then I write music that I enjoy. And some of the similarities just happen to be there. Like, I'm a pop bitch, like, through and through. I like Miley Cyrus. You know what I mean? I don't like her as a, I don't respect everything she does as a person, but her music, like, as much as I hate myself for it, I love
it. It's so good,
it's
honestly.
Oh, God.
Okay, I need to, if you're a pop bitch, I need to ask you about my favorite pop star. This might be where we draw a line in the sand.
Okay, all right.
I wasn't offended by anything Decemberist or Modest Mouse, but Carly Rae Jepsen.
Is that the one that's like, hey, I just met you?
Yes, but that is not her best. That's not her best. You have to go listen to the album Emotion. From,
okay.
I think 2015. It's like life changing.
Okay, well, now I have something to do today. Thank you so much, Quinn.
Everyone who knows my boyfriend and me knows we're like Carly Rae stans. So,
see?
Yeah.
Oh my God, you share that with your boyfriend?
He's the one who got me more into her.
Oh my God, like, true love.
It really is.
See, like, Austin does not enjoy that. I would say he has very out musical tastes, but I mean I grew up listening to, like, so apart from like the Z104 like top 40 hits, I was really into like second wave emo. I don't know if it's second wave, but like Taking Back Sunday, Brand New, Something Corporate.
Yeah.
Not gonna lie.
What was the big Something Corporate song? What was that one single that was super popular?
I could look on my phone.
I remember I really liked one of their songs.
I can be your punk rock princess.
Yes,
you can be my garage van king. Yeah.
Oh, yeah, that's a classic.
Yeah, and then, I mean, that whole Leaving Through the Window album is gaggable lyrically, but also like, I don't care. That was before I cared about that kind of thing. But I was into like Under Oath and like Atreyu, like all these like really hard bands and stuff. I mean, I was into like the emo stuff, but also the hard stuff, and like got really into hardcore for a little bit. And I feel like that kind of shaped my like chuggy, heavy like rock. I hate saying the word rock for some reason.
And rock, like, and roll, man.
Rock! Like, ugh. That kind of helps shape my, like, the heavier side of me musically. But I tend to lean pop vocally, like, 9 times out of 10.
So are you kind of in the poptimism camp of, like, you know, we should embrace pop and, like, you know, eschew the whole, like, dividing lines in the music scene kind of thing?
I think so. I mean, you know, everybody's entitled to their own musical taste and, like, preferences and stuff. Like, I don't get down with noise music. Like, that's just never a thing. Like, free jazz, can't do it, you know? Like, I'm a pop bitch. And I definitely think that there's like a kind of like stigma associated with liking pop. Like, you know, you're basic, you're like so unsophisticated and like whatever. But I feel like getting past that is like just I like what I like and I enjoy it, and I'm like so past the point in my life of like giving a single shit about like being embarrassed about telling someone I'm obsessed with Miley Cyrus. Like,
I honestly think at this point, at least in some kind of like music or criticism circles, it's more embarrassing to be that person who is so dismissive of popular music, because I think that's so outdated and cliched at this point. It's like you're a walking 90s dude rock cliche of dismissing a whole type of music. Or it's like when when some mainstream audiences like would reject like rap for the dumbest reasons.
Yeah. I feel like definitely the reason behind your rejection is like I can't stand that whole like, I don't listen to rap because it's like misogynistic like argument. It's like, fuck you. Have you ever listened to like any emo, any Saves the Day lyrics,
any
or like
country?
Any country music? Like, like how could you possibly? But you know, like people have their own ideas. But yeah, I think it's like super lame-o. Like at this point, it's like become almost cool to like pop again. Like, you know how these things like cycle, and it's right. It's like almost cool again to be like, yeah, like I don't care. Like I'm, by cool I mean it's much more accepted. And like I find a lot of people confessing their love of pop music to me lately, which is like so comforting. You know, it's like I don't know, like coming out in a way where you're like, I have this thing I have to tell you.
Did you ever feel like you had to play that part of yourself down in any kind of music
100%,
circles?
100%. Like I feel like I'm the one putting that pressure on myself. Like I said, I self-edit really hard sometimes, like to the point of like crippling myself creatively. And I feel like that's because I tend to go for pop, and I'm like, I can't bring a pop song to this rock band, you know? And then it's like, but if you play a pop song with a rock band, it's a rock song. You know, I just like, I feel like I create these like mental hurdles for myself about pop music that just like get me nowhere.
I also think the dividing lines between like quote unquote pop and rock are really blurry. I mean, you could classify so many modern rock or pop bands as probably the opposite and it would still be accurate, you know? It's like,
totally.
I mean, is a pop song like you have a chorus, you know? In that case, like there's a lot of rock bands that are pretty poppy. I don't know.
Totally. I definitely think the line, you know, pop to me just means a catchy song. Catchy. And like everybody likes catchy, you know? So everybody likes pop music. Pop is popular. Like, haters,
that's the
be warned.
That's the word on that.
I'm on to you. Yeah.
What kind of stuff are you working on now, and what's next for you and Wingdam?
I actually, like when I first moved back to Baltimore, I wrote a bunch of songs for Wingdam, and we have those all figured out. We've been playing them live, which is exciting, but I feel like so rude playing songs live because people are like, what was that like fourth to last song you played? And I'm like, it's not recorded anywhere. Could send you my shitty voice memo. So what's next is we have almost a full album to record, and we're looking into recording a new album at Tempo House over by the compound. There's like a bunch of like freelance engineers that work there, and we're trying to meet up with them. They came to see us and we've been emailing, and now we just have to find some actual money to give them in exchange for their time and expertise to get the record recorded. And then after that, it's a matter of finding money anywhere in the universe to pay for it, to get pressed into wax, to get, you know, made into records, because we don't have we are unsigned. We have no music label behind us for this album. We were lucky enough to have friends for the last one who helped us out a lot in taking care of all that stuff. So this one, at the point we're at, we have to do all of it ourselves, and aren't really going to rush it.
Great. Well, thanks for coming in, Sarah.
Oh, thanks for having me. Is it over already?
It's over.
Let's talk
already.
About me some more. Just kidding.
Let's turn off the mic and talk more about pop stars.
I know, right? Sounds, you got a couple hours.
Thanks for listening to Female Trouble. I'm Quinn Kelly, and this is a Baltimore Sun podcast. We're available on Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, Google Play, and everywhere else you listen to podcasts. We're also on Twitter at FMLTrouble. Our theme song is Dope Girls by Shifty, featuring TT the Artist. Thanks again, and we'll be back soon.